This podcast is Entail Enhanced. To see pictures, articles, and links of what's being discussed, download the Entail app.
Hi, I'm Anshul, YouTuber, Instagrammer, and a real voice for the Brown Girls. Join me and some very special guests where we discuss taboo subjects and really give the aunties something to talk about. Thanks to Entail for supporting this podcast. Entail is an interactive podcasting app where you can interact with the things we're talking about. We think it's the best way to listen to our show, so please do check it out. Today's episode is all about mental health, and we're focusing specifically on how the South Asian community tends to deal with this. We'll be speaking about how much of a stigma it still is, typical symptoms of depression, and problems that cause mental health in our community. We'll also be giving you an insight on what to expect when speaking to a therapist, and we have the lovely Ranjot, who is a chartered counselling psychologist who specialises in dealing with the South Asian community. Honestly, I think this is such an informative episode, and I really hope we're able to help someone out there. I hope you enjoy. Hello! Hi. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How's your day been?
Busy, just finished work. Yeah, I bet.
Thank you so much for making the time today.
You're so welcome.
So, Ranjot, can you just tell everyone about your job?
So, I am a counselling psychologist, and I qualified 2.5 years ago now. So, it was a 6-year long training. So, now I work in primary care and mental health services, and I dab in and out of private work as well.
Okay, wow. And when did you realise you wanted to get into psychology, and what brought that on?
I basically winged it, to be honest.
What?
So I went to college, and I was adamant that I wanted to be a beauty therapist, and I didn't want to go to uni. And
wow.
Mum said, just apply for anything and see how you get on. I applied, got in for psychology, really enjoyed it, and I thought, okay, I'll just do a doctorate in counselling and see how I get on with that. And
right.
I really enjoyed it, so I've winged it the whole way, to be honest. I had no life plan to do this.
Oh my God, that's crazy. And such a contrast from beauty therapy and now you're a counsellor, which is amazing. And who do you kind of market yourself for? What sort of patients do you normally deal with?
So I mainly work with adult mental health at the moment, but mm-hmm. I specifically specialise where I can in South Asians and their mental health. And I base my whole doctorate research on that.
Okay.
So I try and see clients with that in mind where I can, but it's not always possible, obviously.
And why is it that you mainly wanted to focus on South Asians?
So growing up, for me, I heard a lot of stories about Operation Blue Star in Amritsar in 1984.
Tell us more about that.
So it's about the attacks that happened to the Golden Temple in 1984. And there was a lot of violence and bloodshed. And my granddad was actually a victim of the bloodshed.
God, I'm so sorry.
So that's where it really started. It really got me thinking about, so the family's experienced this trauma. They've had to move now to the UK. And how is that affecting their mental health? And it's only as I started to grow up and realise that actually, no, there must be a link here between the trauma they've experienced, them having to migrate to a new country and start a new life, there must be some sort of impact on their mental health. So that really got me started.
Did they migrate and move here because of everything that happened there? Did they feel like they were unsafe where they were? Or, yeah, did that play any part in their move?
It was part of the reason. And I remember my parents telling me that actually my grandma had to wear a sari and just not identify as being a Sikh woman. So she had to, and she was Hindu, just to go and identify my granddad's body. Otherwise, she would have been killed as well. So,
oh my God.
Part of it was about safety to the UK.
Oh my God, that is really, really scary. And you know what? Another thing that you've just made me think of is my granddad, when he came here, I don't actually know like, I don't think it was anything to do with what happened, but when my granddad came here, he actually changed his name to an English name. He went by the name of Paul. And I think so many Sikh men go by the name of Paul, because then his sons, he's got like four sons, two or three of them are called Paul as well. And then one of my cousins is Paul as like another name. And I don't know, do we need that many Pauls in the world? I don't know. But they've all changed their names to English names to kind of fit in.
And that does happen. They sort of change their identity or their names to try and adapt to this new culture and this new country that they've come to. It's pretty common.
And so just going back to your grandparents, did you ever kind of practice, shall we say, everything you've learned with them?
It's really difficult, because with my grandma, the year I got accepted onto the training, unfortunately, she passed away.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
So for me, that was another motivator that for her, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get through this training and I'm going to help people that were in a similar position. So definitely with my family, it's really helped, where I feel like they're worrying too much, or they, you know, something traumatic has happened. I can't help but my skills just sort of come into it and I just turn into a therapist.
I bet everybody comes to you with all their problems. Like, what do?
All the time. I could be at the Gurdwara. I could be, I don't know, there's something people say that they're attracted to just tell me things. I could be sitting at a bus stop and people start telling me stories and I just think, wow, and I've not even asked you anything. So,
oh my God.
Sort of aura.
Yeah, maybe. You know what some people do? Some people just have that energy where, you know, you just make others feel comfortable, which is good. But usually when you start with a new client, new patient, I should say patient, I would say client. Client's more makeup.
I call them clients too.
You do? Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I get the terminology right. But usually when you start with someone, do you sense that they feel somewhat ashamed to be there ever? Because just speaking on mainly the South Asian community.
Definitely. And I think there's a lot of stigma still attached to mental health in our community, particularly where I work in a hospital, and it's specifically a mental health hospital. They don't like to come to that building. Because if somebody sees them there, automatically they're going to assume, you know, this person's bargle and they've gone to get help. So
yeah, for anyone that doesn't know what bargle means, it means crazy.
Basically. And there's such a stigma attached, even just coming to the building and seeing us. But then you've got people who specifically request not to be seen by a South Asian therapist because they think we might disclose their information, or we might
know. You might know someone.
Exactly.
That's hard. Do you know what you've made me think of? And I know this is the complete opposite thing, but it's like not wanting to go to the sexual health clinic. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could just need a regular checkup, whatever, but you don't want to go because someone's going to think you've got something.
It's exactly that. They just assume, and they don't care to ask you. It's just that assumption, oh, they're there, so there's something wrong with them.
Just imagine if I was a new patient of yours and I've walked in and I'm there, what would your first interactions be like to get me to open up to you?
So it's mainly telling them more about myself. And my background and what I do, what I'm interested in, and actually just taking it at their pace, because I don't want to push somebody into giving me more information than they're ready for. So I always say, you know, I will be asking questions, but just stop me at any point when you feel that I've overstepped the boundary and you don't want to discuss that at the moment. And actually, most times that's enough for people to feel safe, knowing that they're in control. Tell me when to stop.
And what sort of things do you tell them about yourself that's going to make them feel like, okay, I can speak to you?
So a bit about my background, what I can offer them in terms of the support, and basically their therapy plan, and what we can offer them week to week. But I wouldn't disclose information that they could do something with. So, for example, where I lived or something that they could find me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no need for them to know any of that.
No. Yeah, you've got to look after yourself as well. But from your experience, what do you feel is the most common mental health issue within the South Asian community?
Depression. I will always say it's depression, and the South Asian community have the highest rates of depression compared to other societies.
Okay, what is it? Is symptoms the right word again? Well, what are the signs that someone has depression? How can you tell, other than someone telling you?
So if we think about the westernized symptoms, it is thinking about them losing motivation in things that they want to do, or lost interest in activities that they once enjoyed. It could even be having suicidal ideation, lack of sleep or changes in sleep, sleeping too much, changes in appetite. But then if you think about how many of the clients I've seen over the time from a South Asian community, they tend to present with somatic symptoms. So it's more about, I've got a sinking heart, or my brain's hurting. They wouldn't say I've got a headache. That's what drove my research. So what I did was I spent time studying the South Asian community to identify the symptoms that they present with. And it was more about religion and feeling like God had forgotten them, and that was a symptom of their depression, or feeling like they had a sinking heart. So it varies quite differently.
Wow, that's actually so interesting. And I didn't think that there would actually be a clear difference in kind of the way that, like, a westernized kind of depression, and then how the South Asian community has signs of depression. Like, that's actually crazy. Which other problems do you think are quite big that are not getting the attention that they deserve?
I feel like they're all being focused on, but because they tend to present with depression the most, I think a lot of research has gone into looking at depression. But perhaps when we think about then the events like the partition of India and Pakistan, you know, and Operation Blue Star in 1984, perhaps more needs to be done about trauma, because there's actually research, and it's quite early on in research, that shows that there's actually generational depression. So first generation migrants, when they came to the UK, they might experience depression, but then even though we haven't directly experienced 1984, we still are affected by it. So it's among generations, and further research needs to be done on that.
And I also think in their generation, speaking to people openly just wasn't a thing.
Exactly.
Like, mental health is not mental health. Like, I feel like that's a positive way of putting it, to be honest, because we're seeing it as another form of health, you know? And I don't think they saw it like that ever.
And that is so interesting you say that, because when I've done events in the South Asian community, you know, I went to the Gurdwara and I did talks on mental health. And the first question I ask everybody is, do you have mental health? And surprisingly, majority say, no, we don't. And I always have to correct them that, yes, everybody has mental health, but perhaps we don't all have mental ill health.
Right.
And it shocks them to think that, okay, so we all have mental health.
Yeah.
They don't view it as that.
Yeah, it could be good. You know, it's the same way as your body. You could be healthy and you could be ill, you know, and I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the same for your mind too.
Exactly. It is. It's exactly the same. If you had a broken leg, you would go to A&E and you'd get it fixed. So just because you can't see mental health doesn't mean you don't need to work on it.
Yeah, that's so true. And how do you convince someone to come to therapy if they're in unsupportive surroundings? And when I say unsupportive surroundings, I mean towards, you know, mental health or getting therapy, because you might have, for example, me, I might have parents that are supportive of my career, supportive of me doing whatever I want to do. But when I speak about me going to therapy, it's not as supported, or, you know, they just don't get it. So how would you convince someone?
So firstly, I would identify with them what the actual issues are and if it's anything that we could work with. So if it is about wanting to make changes but feeling that perhaps the family don't understand, I always try and invite one of the family members into one of the sessions. And it's not to blame them in any way. It's just for them to understand from the client's point of view why they are feeling the way that they are and how changing the home environment could perhaps be one of the ways that could help the client to feel better. And definitely just seeing that when it comes to the hospital as well, rather than seeing them there, I might see them at a different clinic. So we also see clients in GP surgeries and children's centers.
Right.
So if we can adapt any way we can, if they want to speak in their mother tongue, we will get an interpreter in. So anything that makes them feel more comfortable to speak to us, we will try and do it if it's within our remit.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to what you said about, you know, maybe asking them to bring a family member. If my therapist asked me to bring a family member, mm-hmm. I just wouldn't know how to approach that. Like, because mm-hmm. the family member that is probably bugging you or is probably, you know, is making that whole journey difficult for you anyway. Like, how do you even go to them to get them to leave the house and come with you somewhere and speak about things that are uncomfortable? And these might be things that they don't want to change about themselves, or they don't care. You know, they sometimes they think it's your problem. It's in your head. That's your problem. You're crazy, not me. And how do you get them to bring someone?
So it's a process, because if I, and you're right, once I said that to you, the first thing was, that's not happening. I'm not bringing.
Right, exactly. That's not happening.
Exactly. So the first couple of sessions is spent more about you and making you more comfortable, making you more assertive to stand up for yourself. And I think the number one thing that I always say to my clients is that therapy is not about changing another person. It's about changing your response to the person. That's where the change occurs, because a lot of people come in saying XYZ did this to me. Why can't they just change their behavior?
Right.
That's not what therapy is about. It's about you and changing your response to them. And most often, people change with your response. So as you're changing in therapy and you're changing how you respond to them, they also begin to change with that. So towards the end of therapy, people are more open to bringing family members because something has shifted. They feel comfortable to bring the person in. And if they don't, it's fine. They don't have to. But the option is always there that if you wanted to bring somebody in, you can.
I love that. That is so great. I feel like everything just makes so much more sense now. And it's so true. It is. It's changing you. And yeah, I love how you put that. Thank you. Yeah. But why do you think mental health isn't a big priority within Indian women or men?
I think growing up and even more recently, there's still this huge factor put on if I go to the Gurdwara or if I pray or go to my place of worship, I will start to feel better. And yes, there is an element of that.
Mm.
It will help you to feel better. But we also have to think about there are other options available. But then there's also a language barrier as well, that perhaps they can't voice the symptoms that they're experiencing, or they're not recognized as symptoms of mental health by GPs or other professionals. So perhaps they need the support, but because they're not meeting this westernized criteria for depression, they're just prescribed something or said, you know, see how you get on and come back in a couple of weeks if it's not gone away.
Right, yeah. I kind of don't agree with the whole medication mm-hmm. route, because it's kind of just masking. I mean, maybe I've my own mental health, I've never been that far that I've needed medication. So maybe I don't know, I can't speak and say no one needs it at all, because maybe some people do. But I feel like there are things that you can do before you get to that point, maybe.
I guess it works both ways. So when people are at that really vulnerable stage, medication can help stabilize them so that they can engage in therapy. But others prefer to start therapy first and then take medication if they need it. So everybody's different, but the majority do like to start with therapy first. But interestingly, with South Asians, I think they prefer medication because they just think if they pop a pill, they will feel better. But it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and I think also just they're just so used to it. I mean, with all the blood pressure, cholesterol, you know, diabetes, all of the typical kind of South Asian illnesses that just happen from our diets, they kind of, instead of changing their lifestyles, they just just pop pills. And I see that from my family and relatives in India. You know, they're going to hear this, but gaining weight, complaining about high blood pressure and all sorts, but not doing a single thing to sort of, do anything that's actually going to be really, really good for their health.
Exactly. And that's what it comes down to, is they know that there's an issue there, but they just want that quick wand to come in and fix everything. But it doesn't work like that.
Just going back to you being in clinic and, you know, as you've been dealing with patients for quite some time now, out of your South Asian patients, would you say that you deal with more men or women?
It's difficult for me to say that, only because I'm not in the process of when the referrals come in. So that's more admin that deal with that. So
right.
When they get allocated to me, we've got quite a big team. So I can't really say about numbers. But I definitely, on my own caseload, I've seen more women coming through. But at recent events that I've done at the Gurdwara talking about mental health, it's actually more men that are coming forward and openly discussing things. So maybe there's a shift now where more men are coming forward.
That's good, because I feel like men, they just, especially I can only speak for Asian men, they've just got a lot of pride. I mean, most men do. And showing vulnerability is just a sign of weakness.
Yeah, and it's really interesting with my research that I did. One of the factors that I found were symptoms of crying, which were related to depression. And it was actually more men that owned up to that than women.
Oh, really?
I wasn't expecting to find.
Right, because women cry all the time. I mean, I cry literally probably every week.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I'm always crying.
It is so interesting that more men actually admitted to experiencing that than women.
Wow. And do they cry on their own, like in private, or do they cry to their partners or families? Or
they didn't say that, but that's something that I would be interested in finding out more if I was to do future research. Actually, who is it that they cry with? Do they feel comfortable crying on their own or with their loved ones? Is it at the Gurdwara? You know, where is it that you do this?
Yeah, because watching my brother, I feel like he just bottles everything up, and it has to be something really, really big for him to have a major moment and snap and cry. And that is just very, very rare to see. He's very much like a man's man kind of thing. So I don't want to show that I'm weak, or I don't want to. I've been to therapy myself before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to therapy like a year ago, over a year ago now. And I was coming home and telling him, like, you need to go and get therapy as well. Like, you definitely need to go and get therapy. Like, I was really, really, getting down his throat about it. And I know now that that was wrong with me, because he might not be ready, and, you know, that's not the stage he's at. But, he just was like, but I don't want to talk about things, but I don't want to talk about things kind of thing. And that's hard for me, because I'm like, no, but you need to get things off your chest. Like, you don't realize, you know, how great it is. But guys just don't, they just don't want to speak sometimes.
And that's it. Sometimes they don't want to talk about it. And I can tell you're doing it from a loving aspect, that you found therapy so helpful that you wanted him to go as well, because you're recognizing symptoms in him. But actually, the clients that come in because other members of the family want them to come in, or because the GP thinks they should do it, they do not engage, and it has to come from them.
Yeah, it's so true. And out of, you know, all of the kind of patients that you've dealt with, what are some of the moments that have stuck with you the most? If you could share, that would be amazing.
I think for me, if we're talking about the South Asian community, it's got to be problems within the family. So particularly in-laws always comes up.
Really?
It's a big thing about, you know, double standards and feeling like my mother-in-law is treating me this way, but she treats her daughter a different way. And just helping them to find their voice, just not to stand up to them and, you know, ruin the whole environment, but again, just changing their response to that situation, so they're not left with those negative feelings. And that's one of the key things that does tend to come up is relational problems.
Yeah, that's the same reason I went to therapy as well. It's always family, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, even with me, I went to therapy when I was 18, and it was for panic attacks. And I am exactly the most typical South Asian client you can get. I went to the GP and I said, just give me a pill because I don't know why I can't breathe on the trains. And he just looked at me and he goes, you're having panic attacks. And I just remember thinking, what on earth are you talking about? I've never heard of that. I don't know what that is. And when he explained it to me, it all made sense. And so going for my own therapy, it's really given me a perspective on how clients feel when they're experiencing these symptoms, how it feels to come to therapy and to explore your whole life really with an absolute stranger.
Yeah, it's so true. You know what you said about, you know, having panic attacks and you went to the GP and you didn't know what it was. For me, I didn't know that I had anxiety for years and years and years. And I just thought it was me being difficult. And it was only like, I think I was about 24. It was my birthday and I just ended up being a bitch to everyone. I was really horrible because I just didn't want to be there. I don't know what was wrong with me. In my mind, I didn't want to be at this lunch that my family had actually really kindly booked for me. But yeah, I just wasn't feeling it. And I didn't know at the time what that anxious feeling inside me was. And it was only until like a few weeks later, my sister sat down and spoke to me and was like, you have like, not just on your birthday, but in general, you've been really up and down and you're just a mess kind of thing. And it was only when I just started opening up and speaking about my feelings that like, oh, it's a situation when I feel like I'm not in control, that's when I get this really nasty feeling inside me. Or, you know, if I'm stuck in traffic and I can't get out, or if I'm on a long haul flight and I can't get out, or, you know, things just aren't my choice, I get this really, really nasty feeling. Or if we're at like a family member's house, I just don't want to be there anymore. I'm done. I don't have my car. Mum, dad, can we go? Like, I get this really, really nasty feeling inside me and I start getting really like agitated and uptight and quite like, obviously I can come across rude because I'm being uptight. But I didn't know what any of those feelings were until I spoke about it. And once I knew that actually, okay, those are feelings of anxiety. I mean, are they feelings of anxiety?
They definitely are feelings of anxiety. So it is thinking, here's me reassuring you now, aren't you?
Yes. Thank God. I self-diagnosed, by the way.
So that is a classic symptom, is avoidance, knowing that there's an exit, knowing you can get in your car if you need to escape the anxiety provoking situation. And it's a classic sign.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that, you know, opening up, sometimes we can't see it ourselves. And it's only when other people recognize it and they voice it to you that something clicks and it all makes sense. And it sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And now, ever since then, I mean, it's not like my anxiety has gone away. Now I just can recognize that nasty, bubbly feeling or that uptight feeling that I'm getting. I mean, I get anxiety every single time I'm about to record this podcast. Like every single time I feel like I'm going to be sick and I'm just like shaking. But once I start, I'm fine. But like now I can recognize these feelings. And sometimes I'll openly say like, Mum, I'm feeling really anxious. Like, just don't speak to me. Or, you know, I'll just openly put it out there, and that makes me feel better that I've told the people that are around me. So if I'm acting off, you know why.
Exactly. And when you're able to voice it to them, do you feel that your parents respect your boundaries if you say to them, I don't feel like speaking at the moment because I'm anxious?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first used to tell them, like, I remember I'd come in their room and I'd be like, guys, I'm just not feeling very great, like just something's not right, I just don't feel right. And because I couldn't express what it actually was and the things that are bothering me, I don't think they could take it very serious, or it just sounded like I am going crazy. So yeah, but over the years, as I've said the word anxiety a lot more. And I've explained to them as well, especially my mum, you know, exactly what it is that I feel. And with my mum, I explain these things to her, and she's you know, had a really difficult life herself. And she just says, oh, I don't know why I never had these feelings. We just got on with it in our time. We just, you know, we never had this, which is crazy to me that they are strong enough to just get through things. But yeah, they definitely respect my space and how I'm feeling if I just say it and put it out there.
And that's amazing, because that's what you need, is when you're going through therapy and you're trying to make these changes to better yourself, to reduce these symptoms. And, you know, that is one of the things that we say, is let people know when you are feeling anxious. And I'm so glad that they respect your boundaries, because that's what we would like family members to do.
It's so true. I think you should do that with any sort of mental health issue that you're having. I feel like you shouldn't be ashamed to just openly come out and say it. And yeah, it can feel, before you say it, you feel like, oh my God, what are they going to think of me? Everyone thinks the complete extreme, that you are mental, like that is it. But once you say it and you own it, you don't look that crazy.
Exactly. And it's a feeling, and you're entitled to feel that way. And by voicing it, it's actually, we always assume that the worst case scenario is going to happen. So people are going to laugh at us, or they're going to talk about us. But actually, most likely, people don't do that.
Yeah. Have you dealt with patients that have come to you, come to therapy, they're enjoying coming to therapy, and have they ever mentioned to you that they can't tell their family, or?
Yeah. So minority of clients, they don't tell anybody that they're coming to therapy, because there is that fear of, what are they going to think about me? Or there's a fear that they're going to discuss it with another family member. And it has happened where parents have spoken to aunties and uncles or cousins about the client's mental health. And that's not very helpful, because you're just making the situation worse there, number one. And that puts them off more about disclosing that they're in therapy.
Yeah, it's true, because you don't want to be that person that's turning up to a wedding and then all the aunties are sat there at a table being like, oh, she's the one that's getting, you know, therapy, or she needs help, or, you know. And sometimes in Asian culture, it is very much like that, sadly. It is.
It is, and it grates me, because if it was their own child going through it, they don't want people to gossip. But when it comes to other people's children, they're quite happy to gossip about them. I've never understood that.
Yeah. How do you think we can get people to be more open about dealing with their mental health without there being such a stigma?
I would say get talking to your friends, to your family, if you feel comfortable. Even go to your GP. Your GPs, you know, we always assume that they're busy, they don't have time for us. But they are there for us. They give you the time if you need it. If you tell them that you've got problems and you need to speak to them, or you can refer directly to your local talking therapy service as well, and they offer free therapy. So there's a lot of support out there. There's helplines out there, like Samaritans. It's not only for people who are in crisis. You can ring them just to speak about a situation that you're going through. There's so much support out there. Just take that first step. And speak to somebody and just see how you feel.
Yeah, there really is so much out there. And would you recommend for me, when I went to therapy, I was just like, oh, I don't care kind of who I see. I don't care what background they're from. But I found that when I was, my therapist was a really, really lovely white lady, and she was just so great. I loved going to see her. And I really looked forward to that time every single week. But I would find that I'd spend a lot of the therapy session explaining why things are the way they are, because she's not from my background. So I feel like, and I, you know, I hadn't gone through the GP and I was paying for it. So I'm like, sis, this is not cheap. And I am spending most of my time explaining, yeah, Indian culture. So, you know, would you recommend that it might be beneficial or easier for a South Asian to speak to another South Asian therapist?
I've personally tried it both ways to test it. So as part of my training, we had to have personal therapy. And I thought, if I go to see a South Asian therapist, I won't have to explain the culture and the traditions, and it will make things easier. But what I found was, and this is just my own experience, is that there was some judgment there that I didn't appreciate. And then I tried a white therapist, and I found that, again, that I was having to explain things. But through the process of explaining, things were clicking for me myself. So I can see the benefits of working with somebody from your own culture, which is great because you're not having to explain and they just get it. But then having to explain it to someone who's not from your culture also works just as well.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I've got two last questions for you, and then we're going to play a quick game. So what message would you send for anyone that is going through mental health issues and they don't know what to do?
Speak to your GP, speak to somebody and get some advice, or call a helpline, and just know that just take the first step in getting help, and we'll do the work together.
I love that. Amazing. Thank you. And what message would you send to the talking aunties or family members that are putting pressure on young girls or guys that are just trying to live their best lives?
Keep your nose out of their business and keep your mouth closed.
I love that. I feel like that was really personal to someone. You must have been thinking of someone.
Oh, yes. A lifetime of experiences of gossiping aunties and uncles.
Love it. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to play a quick kind of word association game.
Okay.
So I'm going to say a word and you're going to say the first word that comes to mind real quick. Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Okay. Aunties.
Gossip.
Burfi.
Sweet.
Weddings.
Pain.
Swear word.
Wrong.
Money.
Finance.
Makeup.
Lovely.
Family.
Irritating.
Chai.
Relaxation.
Dogs.
Hate.
What?
I'm sorry.
Oh my God. Finally, Priyanka Chopra.
Nick Jonas.
Love it. Oh my God. Why do you hate dogs?
I just, if they're not mine, it's fine. I can deal with them. But I just don't want them in my home or like on my furniture. And I feel like people don't get the boundaries.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Do you know what? You've made it sound like it's someone else's baby. Like, I don't mind it if they're not mine because I can give them back. But
it's exactly like that. As long as I go home at night.
Right, okay. Ranjot, can you please tell us about any future plans that you have, or you know what we can expect to see from you next few months or whatever? I know you started your Instagram page.
I have, so I'm hoping to build on that a bit more, and I'm also publishing my article on my research, which will be out end of December. So I'll post that on my Instagram page when it's out.
What's your research about exactly?
So it's on, I developed a measure of depression in the Punjabi language for people that have migrated from India to the UK. And it's based on the cultural symptoms of depression that they present with.
Wow. Okay. Oh my God. I'm really excited to read that. So yeah, looking forward to that. And where can people find you? What's your Instagram handle?
So it's at rb_counselling.
Amazing. Thank you so, so, so much. It's actually been so lovely talking to you. And it's really great that we're getting these conversations out there just so that people can feel a little bit more comfortable and not feel so alone.
Definitely. I agree. And thank you so much for having me on here to have this conversation, because I feel like it's really needed.
That was such an interesting episode. Firstly, I want to say a huge, huge thank you to Ranjot for joining me today and sharing all her expertise and knowledge. I really hope we've been able to help someone through this conversation, and it's really, really important for you to know how to deal with your mental health. Please don't ever be afraid to check in with someone, share your feelings, or even seek professional help. There is always a way to get help out there.
Once again, thank you so much, Ranjor, and thank you for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe to my podcast, rate and review. It would really help me out. And for direct links to anything I'm talking about in this episode, download the Entel app.